Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Mr. Chairman, and to all of the freedom-loving citizens of Los Angeles, California, ladies and gentlemen, I cannot begin to say to you this afternoon how happy I am and how deeply moved I have been as I have been a part of this meeting. I think I can say without fear of successful contradiction that this is the largest and most enthusiastic civil rights rally that has ever been held in the history of this nation. And I want to thank you to the bottom of my heart. I want to thank the co-chairman, the distinguished leaders of this community, and all of you for making this great meeting possible. I want to talk with you a few minutes about a city that has been called for years a magic city. But for the Negro, it has been the tragic city. It is the city of Birmingham, Alabama. If a visitor had entered Birmingham just a few months ago, he would have soon discovered that he was standing in the most thoroughly segregated city in the United States of America. Soon after that, he would have discovered that this city had more unsolved bombings of Negro homes and churches than any city in our country. He would have heard about its ugly record of police brutality. And he would have discovered that the average Negro family of Birmingham earns 50% less than the average white family. So he would have discovered that the Negro was dominated politically, exploited economically, segregated and humiliated at every point. But there comes a time when people get tired. There comes a time when people... There comes a time when people get tired of being trampled over by the iron feet of oppression. There comes a time when people get tired of being pushed out of the glittering sunlight of life's July and left standing in the piercing chill of an alpine November. These people of Birmingham, Alabama, decided that they had taken enough. And on April the 3rd of this year, an intensified movement started to break down the barriers of segregation and discrimination. I've never seen a community more united than the Negro citizens of Birmingham. And By the thousands, they went to jail for that freedom that they have long fought and talked about. More than 3,200 were arrested from April the 3rd up to the present day. And they were arrested because they discovered something, that it is ultimately more honorable to go to jail in dignity than accept segregation and humiliation. Because of the power of this movement, because of the fact that all of these people came together and engaged in a nonviolent protest, the economic power structure of Birmingham came to the point of seeing that it was impossible to stop this movement. Victor Hugo said on one occasion that there is nothing more powerful in all the world than an idea whose time has come. Pasternak, the contemporary Russian author, has put it in slightly different language, but saying the same thing, that there is nothing more powerful than the onward thrust of unarmed truth. And an idea's time has come today, and that idea is the idea of freedom and human dignity. Wherever men are assembled today, whether they are in Johannesburg, South Africa, Accra, Ghana, Nairobi, Kenya, Birmingham, Alabama, or Los Angeles, California, the cry is always the same: we want to be free. Now one can well ask, what does Birmingham represent in the history of the struggle for freedom? What does it mean? And I would like to take a few minutes to give the meaning of Birmingham and to say what this movement signifies in terms of our onward struggle for freedom and justice. First, Birmingham represents the fact that the Negro in the South is no longer willing to accept racial segregation in any form. The Negro has come to see that segregation is not only politically unsound, sociologically untenable, but it is morally unjustifiable. Segregation is a cancer in the body politic which must be removed before our democratic and moral health can be realized. Segregation is wrong because it is nothing but a new form of slavery covered up with certain niceties of complexity. Segregation is wrong because it is nothing but a system of adultery perpetuated by an illicit intercourse between injustice and immorality. And this is what it is saying. And so we are saying in the South, we are no longer willing to sell our birthright of freedom for a mess of segregated pottage. We are through with segregation now, henceforth, and forevermore. Birmingham also represents the fact that the Negro now realizes the urgency of this moment. When we started out in Birmingham, there were those voices across the nation saying, The movement is ill-timed. Why don't you wait a while? Why don't you cool off? And for all of these years, we have been cooling off, and that is the danger, that we will end up in a deep freeze. We've heard this wait all too long now, and it has turned out to be little more than a tranquilizing thalidomide that removed the emotional stress for a moment, only to give birth to an ill-formed infant of frustration. And now we're saying we can't wait. We can't wait because we love America too much. The shape of the world today does not afford us the luxury of an anemic democracy. We must see the necessity of moving on at this time and at this hour. This is what Birmingham represents. We are tired of gradualism, tokenism, see how far you've come-ism, and we are now going on to the part of saying, we must see the urgency of the moment. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to transform the pending national elegy in our nation into a creative psalm of brotherhood. Now is the time to lift this nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of racial justice. Now is the time to end the night of segregation. The other thing about Birmingham is this, that it reveals again that the Negro in the South has discovered a creative method of struggle. The Birmingham movement is a movement with an underlying philosophy, the philosophy of nonviolent resistance. This is a powerful approach. Let us not laugh at nonviolence. It is not a weak method, as some have tried to say. For who can call the hundreds and thousands of young men and women, old men and women in the South who've engaged in these movements, standing before howling and jeering mobs, weak persons? Who can call James Meredith weak? Who can call Fred Shuttlesworth, Ralph Abernathy, and Wyatt Walker weak? These are the strong people of this land. Well, here is a method that makes it possible for one to struggle, first without hating. We don't need to hate. Centuries ago, Jesus made it clear that this is the first principle of the universe. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and all thy soul and all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself. But he carried it to another point. Even those people that don't like you, you got to love them. Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, pray for them that despitefully use you. For a long time we've tried to say that these words represented the words of an impractical idealist who never quite came down to earth. But now the psychiatrists in the modern world are telling us that many of the strange things that happen in the subconscious, many of the inner conflicts are rooted in hate. And they are now saying, love or perish. And isn't it wonderful that we now have a method of struggle where it is possible to stand up against an evil system and yet not hate in the process? And there's power in this method. And that is power here. Bull Connor in Birmingham wanted us to use violence. He would have welcomed that. They have a mastery of that art, but we have another art, and it has a way of disarming the opponent. It exposes his moral defenses. It weakens his morale, and at the same time, it works on his conscience. Yes, and he just doesn't know what to do. If he doesn't beat you, wonderful. If he beats you, you accept or develop the quiet courage of accepting blows without retaliating. If he doesn't put you in jail, wonderful. Nobody with any sense loves to go to jail. But if he puts you in jail, you go in that jail and transform it from a dungeon of shame to a haven of freedom and human dignity. Even if he tries to kill you, you develop the conviction that there are some things so dear, some things so precious, some things so eternally true that they are worth dying for. And if a man has not discovered something that he will die for, he isn't fit to live. This is what we've learned. And so this has been a nonviolent struggle for freedom and human dignity. Now you ask, what can we do? Somebody's asking, what can we in Los Angeles do to help? Well, you've already done one thing that you can always do in a magnificent way today, because our struggle requires great financial resources. The millions of dollars that the White Citizens' Councils and other groups spend to keep us down are phenomenal. And in many instances, they get some of this money from our tax money. In the state of Mississippi, the State Sovereign Committee is financed by the state government of Mississippi. And we have to depend on our friends all over this country, because, as you know, the annual income of the Negro in the South is much less than that of Negroes outside of the South and other people, our allies in the white community. So we have to depend on our friends, and that is always one thing you can do. And I want to thank you today on behalf of the people of Birmingham for what you've done in such a sacrificial, dedicated, and concerned way. That is another thing that you can do. You can help us in Birmingham, Alabama, by getting rid of any segregation and discrimination that exists in Los Angeles, California. For you see, we must realize that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And the de facto segregation of Los Angeles, California is as bad as the de jure segregation of Birmingham, Alabama. As long as that is housing and employment discrimination, these twin evils, we will have this problem all over this country. And so I urge you to join with the millions of white people of goodwill in this state and all over this country to get rid of whatever discrimination exists here. Now, the other thing that you can do is use your resources to get over to the federal government that it has a great role to play in this period of transition. And I think the time has come, as I've said before, and I think Birmingham reveals it even more, for the President of the United States to sign an executive order declaring segregation unconstitutional on the basis of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution of our United States. President Kennedy has done some significant things in civil rights. And I think he's a man of genuine goodwill, and I think he understands the depths and dimensions of the problem. But we've got to remind him that he isn't doing enough, and there's more that must be done in order to solve this problem. Now the governor of Alabama says that he will stand in the door of the university to try to prevent a Negro student from entering on June the 10th. And I think if the governor of Alabama will present his body by standing in the door to preserve an evil system, then President Kennedy ought to go to Tuscaloosa and personally escort the student in the university with his body. And I think this will be a magnificent witness for what this nation stands for. This is the only way that we will be able to say to the world that we mean business on this issue of civil and human rights. Thank you for all of the support that you've given. And may I say to you, my friends, that the problem is far from solved, whether it's in Birmingham or other places, and we must continue to work. Don't wait until tomorrow. Don't wait until next year. Remember that the time is now, at this minute, a tiny little minute, just 60 seconds in it. I didn't choose it. I can't refuse it. It's up to me to use it. A tiny little minute, just 60 seconds in it, but eternity is in it. And if we will work hard and go out with a great faith, we will be able to carve a tunnel of hope through the mountain of despair. And all over this nation, all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to cry out from the hedges and the highways, from the villages and the cities, glory, hallelujah, glory, hallelujah, his truth is marching on.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. from the May 26th Freedom Rally at Wrigley Field in Los Angeles, 1963.